This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How many of you are familiar with the term the pot calling the kettle black, or that phrase? So this session this morning is essentially the pot calling the kettle black. And what I mean by that is the phrase means that someone who has the problem that he's telling others how, someone who's telling others how to fix a problem has the problem himself. Okay, so essentially this is the approach here this morning. And so I did think that maybe I should just give you a one line, say yes to no, and then we'll all go home. But actually, we say yes to the Lord Jesus, and we say yes to God's calls on our lives. And therein lies the quandary and the conundrum that we often find ourselves in. So the topic is overcoming a misleading culture of busyness. So what is a culture of busyness? You know, busyness simply means having a great deal to do. But busyness can quickly turn from things we do on a long task list into something we are. A psychological state of mind. The constant pressure we feel to check off tasks on our never-ending list morphs into a way of life. The culture of busyness, this culture of busyness can make us ineffective in our work, to where we become our own worst enemy. So what I've just described to you, I'm wondering, is there anyone here that that kind of like feels this pressure? So if along with all the let's say some practical pointers, the overarching point I would like to make this morning is that a culture of busyness that makes us like scurry about and get a little bit of a lot of things done about an inch deep has to do a great deal, not with the things that we are doing, but it has to do with our frame of mind and what can become a way of life for us. There's a psychological side to it. And that's what I'd like for us to be sure to grasp, because the solution lies not just in manipulating your list of things to do. It lies in addressing your state of mind. So, what steps can we take to overcome just incessantly doing things without getting much done? So this session will cover three levels of activity to help overcome the busyness syndrome. One of them is just improving your time management. And these three levels are, let's say, they kind of go progressively deeper. But we'll first talk about just improving time management, just some practical things in relation to how we, because we all have the same amount of time. Aging or working in a day is actually really fair, because no one gets ahead, no one falls behind. We all have the same 24 hours per day, and so. So it's kind of like a level platform that we start out with. But how we manage that time is what we want to talk about. And then building more margin into your life. It's one thing to just manage the time that you have in a day, but then the way in which you are able to manage that time is impacted by the margin that is built into our lives. And it's also true that the margin or lack thereof in our lives impacts our availability for ministry on the spur of the moment. When there are, as we walk through our lives, we interact with people, we meet with people, the circumstances of our days, fall in such a way that there is opportunity for ministry. God is calling us to use us, but the margins that we have allowed are so small, so slim, that we're driven to go on to the next task, and we bypass and miss the opportunities that God is bringing to us to show himself through our lives. And then the last one is I want to touch just briefly on avoiding burnout. And I want to say alarming, but let's say it is remarkable how many servants of the Lord, Christian men and women, did not lose their love for the Lord, did not lose their first love. They just went beyond being tired to exhaustion and rendered themselves useless in the kingdom of heaven, with the added complication that the resources that now should be going to help others need to be devoted to helping yourself. And so there we want to talk just a bit about some preventative aspects, and then also some remedies, if that is actually currently your circumstances. Okay, so that's kind of how we'll be starting. Now, on your handout, you do not have this next slide here. I just stuck it in here later, but I wanted to just draw attention here to an article that came out in Psychology Today. This was in 2014. It was, Are You Addicted to Being Busy? Now, generally when we talk about addictions, it's negatively. The Bible actually does say we should be addicted to good works, or motivating others to do good works. But there's also I've learned in my own life that I don't know if I will kind of like put this to the level of addiction. But I think it's a helpful framework within which to think about this mental state of mind that just makes us so busy that we become ineffective and don't have enough margin in our lives to be useful to God and the kingdom. So just take the simple question, how's it going? I am busy. That's probably what all of us would say. And what we don't say is, therefore, I am important. Or someone says, how is it going? And we say, I am crazy busy. Which means, I am very important. So, here's the question that Psychology Today posed. Are you medicating yourself with your busyness? Like building up your own self-image. You see, there's much more to the culture of busyness that's so debilitating to us than just the list of things to do. It has to do with the way in which we think about how busy we are. So this was their conclusion, and I'm going to pass this on. While I think this is a great truth, make peace with inaction. Part of the driven nature of like the culture of busyness is that we just need to be doing something, or else we're not of any value, we're of no worth, or maybe we even can't psychologically kind of stand it if we're not busy doing something. So make peace with inaction. Okay, so I'd like to touch just briefly on zeal, on productive zeal. And part of the reason I want to do this is because there's a danger that you will walk out of these doors today and you will say that I actually should not be so zealous. I mean, relax. There's nothing urgent about the gospel. And so there's that danger. And I want to emphasize that we are called to have zeal, but it should be productive zeal. So the definition of zeal is earnestness or fervor in advancing a cause or rendering service, hearty and persistent endeavor. So the reason that Teddy Roosevelt, our 26th president, is pictured there is that when he was a little boy, there was a time in his life. They lived in New York City, and he did not want to go to church. He was 5 years old, and was just like, don't want to go to church. And his mother was asking him, why is it that you don't want to go to church? And he said, well, it's because of the zeal. And the zeal. So she got her concordance and looked up verses about zeal. And she found in John 2, verse 17, that she remembered that the preacher had preached about Jesus cleansing the temple, and it was concluded there that the zeal of thine house has eaten me up. And so she said, well, so what do you think zeal looks like? Maybe like an alligator, or maybe like a dragon, but it's hiding probably in the dark corner somewhere of the church. There's the zeal, and it will eat me up. Now, here's what I want to, the point I want to make about this is that, why did this even come up? So what kind of person do you envision Elijah to be? Here's why I'm asking this question. The incident in which this is recorded in John chapter 2 is when Jesus cleansed the temple. And so the text says that the disciples remembered then that how it was written, and this is written in Psalm 69, that the zeal of thine house has eaten me up. So, and it's also written in 2 Corinthians. So, Jesus was a zealous person. He once asked his disciples, who do men say that I am? And they said, well, some say that you're Elijah. Why do you think they thought Jesus was Elijah? Why was he mistaken to be Elijah? What kind of man was Elijah? And what do you picture? This dynamic, rugged, hardy man of God who got things done. So he was a zealous man. And I'm just suggesting that the way in which we often picture Jesus as this European, calm man that moves gently and slowly is probably a mischaracterization of his zeal. And I'm saying this to say that we should aspire to be zealous Christians. And more on that point later. Okay, so now let's get to the whole issue of time management. So, how many of you come to work or go to work sometimes or most days, and you, as you walk in, you are weighed down with all the important things that need to be done. In particular, there's probably one or two. There are some things that really do need to be done today. And then you walk into your office, and then there is the email inbox, and there is the mail, and there are all of the other kinds of like mundane, routine, daily things that need to be done. And so the next thing you know, it's time to go home, and the important thing that you really needed to, if not finish, at least advance today, is untouched. And as you walk out the door, you think, so what did I do all day? I mean, I spent all these hours here, and I know I did things, but what I really came to work to do today, the important matters that needed to be addressed and pushed forward, somehow or another, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do double tomorrow on that one. And so what's happening when that goes on in our lives? So there's a truism, nothing changes if nothing changes. So if you leave everything as always, you cannot expect them to suddenly change. And so this is the approach I want to present here. So if you look at this, and you've probably seen this time management matrix before. But on the one hand, on the one side is urgent. Like quadrant one, there are four quadrants. Think about your work in four quadrants. Quadrant one is urgent and important. Quadrant two is important but not urgent. And so across the top, see the bar, those are the important things. Now down the side, there are also urgent things. Quadrant three are things that are urgent but not important. And quadrant four are things that are not urgent and not important. So if you spend most of your time doing the things in quadrant three and quadrant four because they are urgent, or especially quadrant three, it's urgent, then you will hardly ever get up to quadrant two and perhaps not as much in quadrant one as you should. Now, what I want to show you on this next slide is some of the actual, the kinds of tasks that fall into these quadrants. And I wish, I wish 47 years ago, someone would have come to me and sat me down and said, I want to explain something to you. I want to explain these dynamics. I would have been 21 at that point. And so I have spent these 47 years, battling this dynamic here. Look at quadrant one. I'm sorry, quadrant four, the red one. Things that are not urgent and not important. But look at the last line there. They're kind of the pleasant things. But it doesn't demand much of your focus, your energy. And you can kind of like easily just slip into doing this and then doing more of the same. And then you get over into the urgent but not important. Routine tab. There are things that do need to be done every day. The maintenance activities, some calls and meetings, I qualified that with some. There are some calls and there are some meetings that belong up in the blue and in the green. But there are a lot of calls and too many meetings that actually reside in the yellow. They are urgent, but at least to somebody, but not important. So, at least to you. Now, there's a saying, and actually somebody wrote a book on them, trying to think, Brian Tracy, I think, wrote a book called Eat the Frog First. And while I'm not advocating a literal application there, The idea is that there are some more unpleasant things. There are some things that will take more of your energy, more of your focus, and it might involve hard conversations. We tend to just put these off and push it out and think that sometime later in the day there will be a better time. The point is, do it first. So my encouragement is in relation to this, the time management matrix, to think about the work that you're about, your work day. Now, this will vary. I understand that this will vary based on what your job is. You know, there are some of us whose job is to do the routine things. And so maybe what is in the yellow for others may be in the blue for you. So make, you know, like make this application, but think about your work and think about what is important. In particular, what is important but not urgent. It's kind of like if you're a farmer, you'd have to do the chores daily. And then you need to do the plowing and the planting. And so sometimes you can put the plowing off for a day, or you can put the, just do the basic minimum of chores and leave some things undone. But there does come a time when you do need to get that work done, get the plowing done, get the seed in the ground, or else harvest will come and there will be no harvest. And so, make sure that you find time to do the urgent, the not urgent, but the important. Things that related to prevention, to improvement, to relationship building, to the long-term activities. Okay, I'm going to move on then to improving, actually a few final comments on improving your time management. Handle quadrant 3 and 4 emails and paperwork once. When you have those emails, those things that come, and it's taking your time, read it, route it, answer it, and file it only if needed, especially in this digital age. Reserve workspace and filing for quadrant 1 and 2 matters that are often not just simple tasks that you do for the day, but they are ongoing tasks or ongoing issues that need to be advanced with others, pushed forward, and kept alive and moving forward. So reserve your prime time and your stacks on your desk or your computer files or however you manage your work. Reserve that for the projects that are ongoing. And for those that are just simple, do it once and leave it. And I might also add that over my life, I've actually learned that it's pretty amazing how many things, if they're not important and not urgent, how many of the red block things, if you just don't respond, they go away. Now, be careful with that one, but that is true. Let's see, where are we going time-wise? I wasn't able to find the clock. Thank you. Avoid the clutter fatigue. Does anyone know what I mean by that? There is just so much. There's just so much clutter. There's things are just you end up with on your desk or at your workplace or whatever it is you're doing. There are so many loose pieces here just flying around that it just makes you tired and you end up reorganizing, shuffling through the stack, and moving this over here, because it's actually going to be better if you put it over here. You're more likely to get it done there. And so you play all these mind games with yourself. Avoid the clutter fatigue. Okay, let's go to the next level, is build some margin into your life. So what is margin? What do we mean here by building margin? Margin is the boundaries, the rest that is purposely built into everyday life. It's the space between your load and your limits. You could say margin is the gap between rest and exhaustion. It's the space between breathing freely and suffocating. This comes from the Living Well blog. This assumes, building margin into your life assumes that there are limits. These limits are physical, these limits are emotional, and the limits are spiritual. Margin has to do with more than just your work. It has to do with your overall well-being and spiritual and emotional health. Why is this important? Why is taking care of your, of being aware of your emotional limits and your spiritual limits important? Because those, when you hit those limits, it impacts the way in which you respond to others. And life is really, in the end, not about the tasks, the numbers. It's about the relationships that we develop with others and the way in which we work with one another. And so if we limit, if we have so little margin in our lives that we are short, harsh, not understanding of other people in the interaction with them, it's often not because it doesn't represent what's truly in our heart, and it doesn't represent, it misrepresents how we're representing Jesus to our culture, and the misrepresentation comes from the lack of margin that we've built into our lives. So I've sometimes posed the question, what is the greatest sin that a Christian can commit? And I would propose to you, without getting into any theology here, that we are created in the image of God. And God's greatest purpose for His children is that we reflect His image in our culture. It's called the Imago Dei, the image of God. And when we, as His children, misrepresent who God is, and by our actions represent God as a harsh, short, bitter, harried God who does not have time to understand your heart, we're misrepresenting Him. So all of us at some point find ourselves here. What the purpose of this topic is to take a longer view and to understand that it's that the remedy is not just a few less items on our task list in a day. The remedy is the manner in which we approach our lives, the margin that we build into it, and an understanding of the impact of the lack of margin in our lives. From a biblical basis, it is vain to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows or anxiety, for He giveth His beloved sleep. So, yeah, a primary way to overcome the culture of busyness is to and become more effective is to, in work and ministries, to build margin into our lives. A culture of busyness squeezes out the time for God to call on us unexpectedly, to show His love and care for others through us. Or margin, as the graphic shows, making time for what is really important. So, over the course of my life, evidently I have the persona of a clerk. Because it's kind of like a family joke that when I go to Walmart, people walk up to me and ask, where are the toothpicks? Do you carry rubber boots? If it's a little old lady, I'll just say, like, they're trained there at Walmart. Well, just come with me. And so I take her there and I show her where the boots are and so on. So this is kind of like a ministry. You can like portray God at Walmart. Okay, I think that's a good place to portray God. But I've noticed something over time. In the local Walmart where we go shopping, there is a cashier that is a Jehovah's Witness, and she is very candid about this. And so whenever possible over the years, I would go to her checkout line. Now, these days, there are hardly any checkouts, and you do it yourself. But when she's there, I often just go there. And so I will stand in that line, and then there will be an exchange, and I will communicate to her about the meaning of serving Jesus. And, of course, there's not much time, but I try to make have enough margin in my life to be able to do that. And then there came the day when my wife was with me, and she said, Paul, I am not going to Walmart with you anymore. As I reflected on that, it's indicative of a lack of margin that is causing me to misrepresent Christ. And I thought back on that incident. I remember standing there in line, and she is being very pleasant with other customers that are in line ahead of me, and she's saying to them, "How are you? Have a good day. May the Lord bless you. May the Lord bless your day," and so on. And I'm standing there, and finally it's my turn, and she looks at me, kind of like, "How are you today?" And I want to just like snarl. Just take my money, and give me my stuff. And I didn't say that, but you don't have to say the words, because we can actually. I'll bet all of you know how to do this. You can go like walk by somebody in such a way that they get the message: do not interrupt me. I am doing something very important, and it's not talking with you. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean you don't have to say that. So I use going to Walmart as a good gauge of margin in my life. And I would recommend that think about the areas of those points of contact. And if there is one that recurs, if you have a recurring point of contact that gives you a way to measure the margin in your life, be aware of it. So there are two inefficient effects of the lack of margin in our lives. One of them is workload paralysis. What I mean by this is, those times when you just shuffle paper around. There are so many things to do that you just do a little of this, and then you do a little of that, and then a little of this, and in the end, you've not made a meaningful progress in any of them. but you've just shuffled it around, and it's almost like this paralysis that is preventing you from really getting something done. Just be aware of when this happens. Think about the four quadrants. Isolate out the most urgent and important things and focus on those. The other is procrastination. This would be a whole topic of itself. And all I'm going to say about procrastination is you can Google it. There are many tricks to like to try to induce yourself to get things done. But what I'd like to point at, the one hazard I really want to point out is that if you have an important but unpleasant thing to do, or let's say a hard thing to do, and you've pushed it off longer than you should, there's a mental process going on where now coming back to that task is actually like you have to like recalibrate. You have to go back and rethink ground that you've already covered. And so there's a natural tendency for us to not do that and go on to other equally important things and focus on those things. Take, for example, let's say I'll just pick a customer complaint, and you need to call back regarding this customer complaint, and you know that it's going to be a trying conversation. And so next thing you know, another customer complaint comes in, and you make that call, and then there's something else, you make that call, and all the while, the one you've been dreading falls further behind. Now, what's going on with that? But we have a natural predisposition to, once you have to go back, once you've procrastinated and you have to go back and cover that ground again, you can almost like justify that it's going to take so much time, I'd better just go ahead and do these things, and it will become an even greater liability because problems don't increase or don't get better with age, as you know. Okay, just want to throw that out. So make and maintain a list of all the good things that you can do and the projects that you absolutely... Actually, let me say this again. Make and maintain a list of all the good things and projects which you absolutely refuse to do or spend any time on so you can focus on what you ought to be doing. Now, your handout says K. Predmore, Bob Jones University. That's wrong, actually. It's K. Predmore, as quoted by Richie Lauer. And but I think here's a great truth I want to communicate to you. Okay, in the remaining minutes here, I want to talk about burnout. I mention it here for the two reasons. One is prevention. The other is a remedy. So I have a little booklet that I will recommend called Zeal Without Burnout. Seven Keys to a Lifelong Ministry of Sustainable Sacrifice. So Zeal Without Burnout. There is another session here at Reach about burnout. So I'm not going to go deep into this. I just want to make you aware of this resource and just point out that zeal for Christ is commendable, but unsustainable zeal is costly to ourselves and to the church. I've already mentioned that because it now takes the resources of the church to care for ourselves. Christ calls us to sacrifice and self-denial, so ministry will not and it should not be easy, but sacrifice is not the same as burnout. If you stop to think about it, that term, living sacrifice, is really a compelling term. Don't sacrifices die. We are to be living sacrifices. That means sustainable sacrifice. What is sustainable sacrifice? It's the big difference, I would suggest, between being tired and being exhausted. And this book then covers seven keys to a pathway of sustainable sacrifice. And I'm going to cover these seven just very quickly. One is, first of all, know your creaturely, your limits. We're created beings. Know your creaturely limits. The scripture says that God who cares for us never slumbers or sleeps. Now, he can do that because he is God. But we are dust. And we will return to dust. And one of our limits is that we need to sleep. So, there are many we need sleep. We need rest. A key to sustainable sacrifice is periods of rest. Or we need Sabbaths. We need times off. We need friends. We can't do it ourselves. We need inner renewal. All of these are things that God doesn't need, but we need. And so a key to having a lifelong ministry of sustainable sacrifice is to know these limits that we have. And then we also need to know our spiritual carnality. We need to be aware of our predisposition to cater to the glory of men. And there are many things that we do that bring us exhaustion and wear us out that are not sustainable because of the way in which we are seeking glory from others. So we need to be aware. To live a life of sustainable sacrifice, be aware of that predisposition. Be aware of discouragement. So, to be effective, to be more like Jesus, be zealous, pray all night, live sacrificially, and take naps. I want to, in the last few minutes, tell you a little story. I work for Anabaptist Financial. We have core values: brotherhood, integrity, responsiveness, and stewardship. As in my role, one of my jobs is to call the rest of us to live by our core values. And I came to understand that I was regularly, with impunity, breaching one of our core values: responsiveness. I hope it wasn't the emails I just ignored, but I was in my effort to call the rest of our organization and to model for them brotherhood and integrity and stewardship, while I myself am violating responsiveness, undercut the whole proposition of having core values and holding others to them. And so first I said, okay, I need to reset my life. And then I came to understand that I need to repent. And so I repented, am still repenting, of the lack of responsiveness. And I looked within my own heart, and here's what I... And to get to real change in my life, I had to come to grips with the reason for my lack of responsiveness. I could project, I'm the executive officer. I have lots of important things to do. Don't bother me with mundane things. But it actually had to do with the pride in my own heart, where I cut myself slack that I would not extend to others. And I came to understand that it's more than just the number of things on my task list.
It's become a way of life. It's become a state of mind. And more alarmingly, it's affected my heart. And so I share everything today with you about being busy, yes, but effective, no. I learned that there was an alligator or a dragon hiding in the dark corners of my heart. And it was misguided zeal that arose from a lack of understanding of my own limitations. And so I communicate to you, be aware of your, make use of the practical, you know, time management techniques, but be aware of your own limitations and build margin into your lives with intention so that we represent God in our culture as He really is. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.